I never thought in 1996, when I started to understand about this corruption in our government, and when in 1999 I decided to walk against it, I didn't know that I was going to be here in 2002. Ooh. And I'm 92. I didn't think I was going to be standing here in a tent introducing my most favorite songster, the man who wrote me the first letter of congratulation when Dennis and I finished the book, which he said that he had changed his life after reading that book. He was out working again. You all know who he is, and you all know that you came here for him. That's why I came. This is Peter Seeger.
You know the song, you can sing it better than I can. To everything there is a season. To everything. Time and a time for every purpose. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to be born, a time to plant, to reap, a time to plant, a time to kill, to heal, a time to kill, a time to laugh, to weep, a time to laugh. A time to be. Oh, get some harmony. To everything. There is a season. And a time for every a time to build up. A time to break down, a time to build up, a time to dance to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, a time to cast away, to gather, a time to gather stones together. A time of war, a time of peace, a time of war, a time of love, of hate, a time of love, a time you may embrace, a time you may refrain, a time to refrain. Every purpose. time to gain, a time to lose, a time to gain, a time to rend, to sow, a time to rend, a time of love, of hate, a time of love, a time peace, a time of peace. I swear it's not Julius Lester tells me that those words, originally in Hebrew by a man named Koheleth, were put together around the year 252 BCE. The armies of Alexander the Great had charged through that part of the world on their way to Egypt and left a trail of Greek culture, buildings, poetry. And the style of poetry this is shows Greek influence. Of course, then it was translated in the year 1607 in London into a translation that is so poetic that it more people read the Bible in English-speaking countries than in any other part of the world because it has such a fantastic translation. People wondered if Shakespeare had anything to do it. There's absolutely no paper trail whatsoever. And finally, scholars came to the reluctant conclusion that Shakespeare did not have anything to do with the King James Version of the Bible. But about 15 years ago, I think it was a young woman, thought, Shakespeare was 46 years old in that year. She looked up the 46th Psalm of David, counts 46 words from the beginning. There's the word shake. She counted 46 words from the end of that same psalm, and there's the word spear. That's too much of a coincidence. All I know is that whoever wrote the line, "A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together," was a very, very, very good poet. None of us know how the world is going to be saved. The human race, we come from millions of years of killing each other. Your ancestors and mine were good fighters. The ones who were not good fighters didn't have descendants. At the same time, we are a very social animal living in groups, and we learn to communicate. Many anthropologists feel that the reason our ancestors defeated the Neanderthals is that we probably had better skills in not only words, but arithmetic. Perhaps somewhere there in Europe. You know, it took several thousand years before there were no more Neanderthals in Europe. I can see up at the top of the valley there's a Neanderthal tribe, at the other end of the valley is tribe of our ancestors. They say, now we attract them down. Five of you get behind that rock. Five of you hide over there in the bushes. And they'll come directly towards us. And when you hear me go, woo, you attack them from both sides. To live in a tribe, though, you have to know how to argue and how to forgive. And inside our chromosomes are not only the urge to use sticks and throw stones, probably the reason we love baseball, but also if we hadn't been very selfish when we were first born and we grabbed for that nipple and started sucking, we wouldn't have lived. But if some people hadn't been very unselfish, we probably would not have survived childhood. So out of all this complicated background, how are we going to save this world?
I think your job here has got to figure what are the things that work, what are the things that don't work, and see that next time you have another gathering, there are twice as many independent radio stations. Every college town should have one. And you might consider how to change the tactics in a big city. You know, about 3 years ago, there was a United Nations conference on urbanization. It was held in Istanbul, because over half the people in the world now live in the cities. And Fidel Castro made an interesting speech. He says, people of the cities have the worst environment of the world, and it's not going to be cleaned up for them. They're going to have to struggle to clean it up. But in this struggle, they will be learning things necessary for the future of the world. In other words, how to work with people of different religions, different ethnic backgrounds, and so on. And I find that what's been going on in New York City in the last 30 years is absolutely fascinating. There have never been so many small organizations working here and there. In Queens, there's a newspaper stand, I'm told, that sells newspapers in 182 languages. And people of the cities are going to show the people of the small towns and the countrysides and the suburbs how to work together. I really do believe. And you can be part of this struggle. Admittedly, the English language is crazy. Josh White read a book by Richard Lederer and put together a rap called Crazy English. English is the widest, most widely used language in the history of the planet. One out of every seven human beings can speak or read it. It has the largest vocabulary, perhaps 2 million words. But face it, English is crazy. Next time, help me out. Just a few examples. There's no egg in eggplant. No pine or apple in pineapple. A writer writes, but do fingers fing? Do grocers gross? Quicksand works slowly. Boxing rings are square. English is crazy. If the plural of tooth is teeth, shouldn't the plural of booth be beef? It's one goose, two geese. Why not one moose, two meese? The plural of index is indices. Should it be one Kleenex, two Kleeneces? English is crazy. Need a little harmony. Crazy. In what other language do you drive in a parkway and park in a driveway? Recite at a play and play at a recital? Ship by truck, send cargo by ship? Have noses that run and feet that smell? English is crazy. You have to marvel at the lunacy of a language in which your house can burn down when it burns up. You fill out a form when you fill it in. Your alarm clock goes off when it goes on. And if a vegetarian eats vegetables, what does a humanitarian eat? English is crazy. Well, English was made up by people, not computers. Reflects the creativity of the human race. So that's when I wind up my watch, I start it. When I wind up this rap, I end it. English is crazy. I guess you know better than I how, if you're going to reach out to people in a community, you've got to reach out to all kinds of people and find ways, and humor is a good way, to get people to listen to each other, even when they think they disagree violently. Suddenly they're surprised to find out there's places they agree with each other. The next few decades are going to be so exciting. You're going to see exciting things happen. True, there'll be some terrible things probably, but there's more wonderful little things going on in this country than ever I have seen in all my life. All sorts of little things. We built the big Clearwater 33 years ago. It was a committee of quite a wide-ranging committee. Artists, business people, Republicans and Democrats and independents, and history lovers, and ecology type people, young people and old. Now there's a dozen other boats like it, a couple schooners in Chesapeake Bay, a couple in Lake Michigan, several up the New England coast. And now they're finding you don't have to have a huge boat. There's an organization called the Atlantic Challenge, which brings together people who love small wooden boats, 15 feet, 20 feet, 30, at most 40. And in the Dublin, Ireland Marine Museum, they found a 38-foot rowboat, if you can imagine one. It was a French admiral's longboat. In the year 1798, it got captured when it went ashore in Bantry Bay. Now they've built 40 more like it in Europe, 10 more like it in this country, and they race each other. And here's a typical story. A woman in Tacoma, Washington, the mother of one of the main apprentices in the main apprentice shop, says, "Oh, what a beautiful boat. Send me the plans." She takes it to a boat builder. He says, "Oh, I could build one of these in a year for $20,000 or $30,000. She said, "I don't want you to build it. I want you to show us how to build it." In other words, she wanted to build an organization. It took twice as long. It took them 2 years. But now the boat's out on Tacoma Bay. It's the southern part of Puget Sound. And she gets a phone call. "Can we borrow your Bantry?" She says, "We'd love for you to use it, but you must train 13 people, a bow watch to make sure you don't run into a log, 10 strong people at the oars. Some of the oars are 18 feet long. And don't make them all men. And then you need a navigator who knows all the rules of the road and has a cell phone, and a coxswain to steer." And now it's being used every week. And it's taking the mayor out and the president of the Chamber of Commerce and the head of the Central Trades and Labor Unions and the president of the graduating classes. It's saving Tacoma Bay with nothing more than a beautiful, beautiful rowboat. There are going to be so many surprising things, and you are going to be right in the middle of it, reporting on it and getting people enthusiastic about it. I'll only add one more thing. Keep in mind that the key to the future is what we do, not what we say. And when we get people thinking, how our big job is to find out the right thing to do. Often the right thing to do may seem like a rather trivial thing. Way back in 1955, December 5th, who could say that riding in the front seat of a bus was that important for African Americans? Why, voting is important. Jobs, health, schools are important. Why don't you concentrate on that instead of riding in the front seat of a bus? But they perceived this was something they could win on. Not just attempt to win on, but they could win. And of course, it just so happened that one of the most extraordinary human beings was there. He didn't actually want to lead it. He wanted to write a book. He was a scholar. He'd graduated from high school at age 15, from college at age 19. After divinity school, he wanted to study for 2 more years under some professors of philosophy at Boston University. He was offered 3 very good paying jobs at northern universities. But no, he took a smaller pay job in a little church in Montgomery, Alabama. But he perceived that if he could hold this bus boycott together and win it, that might be the most important thing he could do. And he used all his training, all his energy, and he did. The cautious conservative ones, the angry radical ones, he said, we have got to stick together. If we stick together, we can win this. And 13 months later, they did win it. Down in Alabama, 1955. Not all of us here today were then alive. A young Baptist preacher, he was 26, led a bus boycott. He showed a way for a brand new day without firing a shot. Don't say it can't be done. The battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. Got it? You're going to sing it with me. Sing that first line. Don't say it can't be done. Try it. Don't say it can't be done. You got it. Here's the second line. The battle's just begun. Try that. The battle's just begun. Now we put them both together. Don't say it can't be done. The battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King. Got it? Take it from Dr. King. Now we put all three lines together. Just one moment. I got to shift these gears here. Don't say it can't be done. The battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King. You too can learn to sing. Got it? You too can learn to sing. Here's the last line. So drop the gun. Got it? So drop the gun. Now we do all five lines and you know the chorus. Don't say it can't be done. The battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King. You too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. Oh, those must have been an exciting 13 years. Young heroes, young heroines. There was laughter, there was tears. Students sitting down at lunch counters. Children dancing in the streets. To think it all started with Rosa refusing to give up her seat. Don't say it can't be done. The battle just begun. Take it from Dr. King. You too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. Songs, songs, songs kept them going and growing. They didn't know all the millions of seeds that they were sowing. They were singing on marches, even singing in jail. Songs gave them courage to believe they would not fail. Don't say it can't be done. The battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King. You too can learn to sing. So drop the gun. We sang about Alabama, 1955. But since September 11th, many wonder, will this world survive? But if the world learns the lessons from Dr. King, we can survive, we can, we will, and so we sing. Don't say it can't be done, the battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. Native American love song.
now I think supper's ready.